Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Welcome to the live show. This is a thing I do every Tuesday-ish where I answer questions that are submitted during the week. I get questions of a variety of methods. The best way I appreciate getting them is through the Whitewater Guidebook website. That way they get cataloged. We just pay attention to them. But I get questions by email, through fax, well, not really fax anymore, but through Instagram messages. Those are fine, but it's way easier if they come through Whitewater Guidebook. It's way easier to communicate. I don't check that stuff very often. If you're watching and you heard the intro, will you let me know if you heard the audio for the intro? Because it didn't seem to come through. And yeah, with that, let's get started. We have a lot of questions to answer today. And we're going to do is answer some questions. And then I want to talk about a blog post I wrote about PPE and PRE, which is the equipment we wear on our bodies, but also rescue equipment. PRE is personal rescue equipment. So let's get to the first question. And this one's nerding out on flip line materials. Oh man, this is, I love this. I've nerded out on flip line materials way too much. And so I kind of skimmed through this question ahead of time. I'm super jazzed to go through this. Here we go. So the question is, and by the way, this is meant to be a live YouTube show where I answer questions live and people are watching and interact. If you have questions that come up during the show, just ask them in the comments. I'd be super happy to answer comments. And I read some of these ahead of time. I read some of the questions ahead of time. And this one I saw really quick. So thoughts on a personal flip line made of 5mm 12-strand braided HMPE Dyneema. I'm planning on buying some splicing eyes on both ends. There's a lot more I see that you wrote here. So I'm just going to get to this really quick. Yeah, that sounds good. You know, if your goal is a flip line, literally all a flip line really is a piece of rope. And you just need a piece of rope to flip rafts. It could ideally, I mean, a good length for them is like at least 8 feet, at least as wide as your boat, but probably longer. A key component with a flip line is you want to be able to grab it. And so it's something that's grabbable. So 5mm rope, if I remember, is not very thick. It's hard to grab 5mm rope, but I don't have any 5mm around. I don't, but it just doesn't seem like if you can grab it and flip a raft back over, it's great. And so again, the primary objective of a flip line is that if you can flip a boat back over and it's carryable. And so nice thing about 5mm, excuse me, is that it's really thin. It fits in a PFD really easily. And so it's small. You'll actually bring it, you'll carry it, and it will probably work. And also like splicing eyes on both ends, I like that a lot now. I used to always carry one big loop, which is what I used for flipping boats. And now I like one long rope or piece of webbing with eyelets on both ends, whether they're spliced in, sewed in, or just tied in as knots. That way they're multiple purpose. So here we go. The price would be about $4 per flip line compared to $28 for the 14mm ultra high molecular weight polyethylene webbing flip line used on River Hardware. So those of you who don't know, I sell a flip line. I have one right here, actually. It's this bad boy. This is 13mm, right? 14. I think it's 14, or I thought it was 13mm. Anyway, it's about 14 millimeters thick. And it's made of really strong, ultra high molecular weight polyethylene. And I make myself big so I can so you can see some of this stuff. And then it's got sewn eyelet. And it's kind of green on the outside, easy to kind of see. Again, it's got loops on each end. If I remember right, it's 12 feet long. And I definitely nerded out on size and material and length quite a bit before I finally picked this one that we sell on River Hardware. So yours would cost $4. Sweet. I mean, you could get some rope at Walmart. It costs like $2, you know, but you're going to use 12 strand braided HMPE, which is, I don't even know what that is, but that sounds good too. If you're just going to flip a raft, it doesn't need to be that strong. It can just be a piece of rope. And so you could do it cheaper with just twine, honestly. The reason you would want it stronger, like what you're going to do, what it sounds like you're going to do, is if you want to use this also for an anchor that goes on a raft or an anchor that goes on a shore. And I can just tell you, I've like hooked my F-150 up to this lengthwise, gone in reverse at full speed trying to break this thing, and I broke the device that I used to measure the force instead of this. We have pulled so hard on these. I have not broken one. Now, they're not officially tested, so please don't go rock climbing on it. Please don't put your life on this. My testing is anecdotal. It's just a few things. It even says not for climbing here because it's not for climbing, not for climbing use. But for like gear hauling, for like rafts, for doing some sort of equipment retrieval, this is very strong. Like definitely stronger than regular webbing that we used to carry. Well, and it's still good to have webbing as well because this may not be long enough for some anchors that you need to do. But you would want this strong only if you want to have it double up as also like a raft or boat anchor, which you don't need. It's a flip line. It's there to flip rafts. It's just a nice bonus if your flip line can also double as an anchor. The other thing, before I go on to the rest of the question, is that this material, this ultra high molecular weight polyethylene, slides over carabiners really nicely. Like low, if you feel it, it's like a low friction. And so you can do some really cool 4-to-1 mechanical advantage systems using this and just carabiners, or the transport hitch, the voodoo hitch, works really well with this because it slides really nicely. It's minimal friction over carabiners. Okay, so this has multiple uses. You hold your raft, flip your raft. I use it, pull my kayak up sometimes. I can use it for mechanical advantage, for anchors. So it's nice thing about having the webbing is that. The only downside I can think of is increased friction through a carabiner when using mechanical advantage and having to splice it yourself. Yeah, I mean, you have to do the splicing yourself, which I mean, when I was a Boy Scout, I hated it. It's not something I want to do ever again. So, but if you're happy splicing, that's great. And yeah, the mechanical advantage thing is kind of cool with this because it slides over carabiners nicely, but it's not that big of a deal. I've never done that in the real world. It's just something I theoretically might do someday if I have minimal gear. Like if I'm kayaking, and all I have is my flip line and some carabiners, I have a tool to pull a kayak out. But you're not going to do mechanical advantage to pull a gear load out with this. Like, there's just not enough power. The other disadvantage, and I mentioned this earlier, is what can you hold on to? What can you pull? And I debated this a lot with this, the width. The wider this is, the bigger diameter it is. If it's a rope or wider is webbing, these easier it is to grab when you're doing the flip. And so it was such a debate. If you go too wide, it's going to be kind of bulky, not want to fit in your PFD as well. But if you go too thin, you can't grab it. Palm Equipment makes one of these for kayaking that I think, if I remember right, it was like 12 millimeters, just a little bit narrower, which I thought was really hard to grab when I'm flipping. Whereas this, whatever I came up with, I think you said it was 14 millimeter, whatever I finally chose as the width, I felt it was like a good compromise between easy to grab and also not too bulky that it will fit nicely in your PFD. My only concern with 5 millimeter rope is it's just going to be hard to grab. Like you can grab it, you can do it. It's just going to be hard. And maybe you have special grabbable rope. P.S. I may go even smaller on the diameter based on tests I've seen you do with 3-to-1 systems. It doesn't seem like I would ever need more than about 6 kilonewton strength in a 2.5 millimeter 8-strand HMPM. Yeah, I mean, you don't need any strength. It depends what you're doing. If you want an anchor for the land or the raft, like I mentioned earlier, strength is helpful. But if you're just using to flip boats back over, it basically has to hold like, 150 pounds max probably. So it doesn't need to be strong. I would hesitate to go smaller diameter because it's just going to be so hard to grab. Again, that's the problem. If you want, it's like throw bags. Those of you that have 1/4-inch diameter throw bags, if you throw it, the person swimming is going to have a hard time grabbing it and the person on shore is going to have a hard time holding it. Where if you go up to just even to 5/16, it makes such a difference for grabability. So I really debated this again with this one. Like I didn't go wider for strength. This thing's plenty strong. I went wider for what I feel comfortable holding on to. And man, honestly, like this could even be wider. I've been tempted to make a second version that is even maybe like 20 millimeters for people that want something that is way more grabbable and don't mind the extra space it takes in your PFD. So those are my thoughts. Think of all the room at PFD I could save. I could bring more trinkets. You could bring all kinds of trinkets.
Yep.
Yep. Cool. Hopefully that answers your question. Moving on. Cataraft setup. Hey, Zach, I recently purchased a 12'6" Sotar Legend Cataraft. Sweet. That's a great, it's a solid all-around Cataraft. You're stoked. But I've never capboarded before. Interesting. I mean, it's hard to do. It's hard to go capboarding unless you own one. So that makes sense. It's like a lot of this rafting gear, you can't test it, demo it. It's like oars. You can't demo oars. So people, you know, a lot of people have the wrong length oars because you can't just go test a bunch. You just have to buy what you buy. Would love if you could post a video for how you rig a capo frame for day tripping or load a cap for shorter overnights. Otherwise, any videos for this you could recommend? Oh, I could. Next time I rig my capo, maybe I'll do this. It's not rocket science. You just tie it on a bunch of places. People nerd out about it big time. I like to be, I guess my only real advice is where you put the seat in the oar towers. You know, I think there's two schools of thought. You want to sit in the center of the boat so your center mass is in the center and it pivots around the center mass. But you might say you want the oars in the center so your oars are pivoting your pivot points to the center versus the center mass in the center. And if you put the oars in the center, you're sitting a bit back and it's hard to be aggressive going into holes and things. And you kind of do a little bit of a wheelie. So I would suggest sitting at the center of mass, at the center of the boat, or the capo specifically, sitting at the center and having the oars up ahead a bit. Having the center of the boat be halfway between the oar towers and the seat. That might have you be sitting back a little bit. If I'm going to be really aggressive and pushing a lot, I'll sit more forward. If I'm going to be doing sort of like a North Fork Payette, it's a lot of just pushing through big waves. You're not doing a bunch of technical pulley moves. High water wind, I'm going to be like pushing through big waves a lot. And so I'm going to sit forward. Where if I'm doing more technical big drops, I'm going to sit back more. So I'm not going to sit super far back, but I'm going to do a lot more pulling, a lot more back ferrying, I want to be sort of I want half of the boat to go over a big drop as I go. Like, does it make sense? I'm not explaining that well. If I'm going over like an 8-foot drop, I don't want to be in the front, very front of the boat. I want to be sort of middle. So for more like big water, aggressive, just pushing through big stuff, I'm probably sitting at the center of the boat or forward a tiny bit at a normal boating, just like big, or especially technical big drops, a lot of moving around. I'm probably splitting the difference. I'm having the center of the boat be halfway between the oar towers and the seats. Sorry, that was a lot of information I just said. I have a lot of thoughts about this. I'm not sure I'm going to make a video about this, to be honest with you. I'll try to remember. I'm not sure when I put my capo together. And so I'll try to remember this. The other thing about it is there's so many opinions out there. I just like, you know, if I put a video out about how to set a capo up, you know, I'll get a bazillion people saying, no, you got to do it this way. And I'm super happy with how I do it. And I hate to share how I do it. And sometimes because there are a lot of ways to do it, but yeah, I should make that video. So yeah, maybe I will actually, now that I think about it. Anyway, I checked your channel, couldn't find anything like that. I don't think I've done something like that. I know I saw another video, another YouTuber did, and I watched it and I was really concerned about what they said. I wouldn't recommend it because I wasn't impressed. And that's why I worry about if I do it, somebody else seems like, oh, I don't know if I agree, which I just need to deal with. People don't agree with me all the time. All right, moving on. Rick says, get some flip dangles. Zach loves them and thinks they look super cool. Yeah, earrings. We call them earrings. I collect them. Every time I convince somebody not to have their little flip dangles, I call them earrings now. And we call them earrings because they're just decorative and pointless, just like earrings are. Like if you wear earrings and they hang, like your flip dangles are basically pointless and useless. And then people have told me they've used them and they saved them, whatever. They're just ridiculous, but I collect them. Anybody who in my classes who I talk out of their flip dangles and doing a flip line like a real person, They usually give me their flip dangles as a gift. So I have a collection of my earrings in that back room over there. They don't look cool. That's just so y'all know, I don't get flip dangles. I don't love them, and they do not look super cool. This is, I think that's called sarcasm. Okay, moving on. Learning. Any guide help for working as a river guide? I don't even know what this means. Any guide help? If somebody understands this question and can, in the comments, tell me what this is asking, that would be helpful. If you're looking, are you asking for if we need guides, or are you asking for advice on how to be a guide? We're always hiring guides. But one, this is going to sound really snarky, but it's true. One of the key components we're working for us is you have to write complete sentences. And I don't think this is a complete sentence. Like if somebody does an application to work for us and their application doesn't have complete sentences with like a subject and a verb and they capitalized, at least you capitalized the first word and used punctuation at the end. But like we need to be able to read what you wrote. That's like a thing that we look in for hiring. But if the question is, are you hiring guides? Yeah, we're in the middle of that right now. Michael's in the room next to me interviewing somebody as we speak. And I do 4 or 5 interviews a week. If you want advice, now that would be any tips for working as a river, for getting a job as a river guide. I would say, go to guide school. Like I can't recommend a guide school because I don't know any that I'm like super jazzed on enough to recommend. But you know, get your basic foundational skills down. Like you want to be able to throw bags, flip rafts, understand the different guide strokes, different commands you use paddle boating, and once you go to guide school, then just email 20 different day trip companies and go, you know, do what it takes. I mean, my first season, I had to work for 4 different companies. I couldn't even get full-time work with one and slept in my truck every night and just always drove up in the forest to find a place to sleep. I didn't have a place to even live, and just go find somewhere. If you have a certain area you want to visit, like California or Colorado, try to get, or Washington or Oregon or wherever, try to get a job in one of those places. But you need some training. So go get some training from professionals, and then you'll need first aid, you'll need CPR, you'll need some sort of basic rescue training, which you can get in the guide school. Or like look for companies who will train you. I know Echo Canyon in Colorado, I think they have like a 3-week class that's free. So you just, you know, take their 3-week class, and at the end, if you're good, they give you a job and go from there. So that's probably the way I'd go, is something like that. Like Echo Canyon has a program. My friend Tim at River Drifters has a thing like that. He like finds people and sends like, you know, whatever, 10 of them to a guide school and probably hires 6. 6 probably finish. Who knows? I don't even know what the number is, but find a place that does their training and then they'll employ you afterwards. That's probably the best way to work as a river guide. Okay, moving on. And if somebody understands this question and can tell me what this means, that'd be cool. Or if the person who asked it can maybe elaborate what they're asking, that'd be cool. Okay, whoa, what's this? Is it possible to put electric starts on my Aaron's 938025? Also, is it possible to put slider skidders on it? I have no idea what an Aaron's 938025 is, and I don't know anything about electric starts. So I'm going to skip this question. Thanks for asking. This is a great question for ChatGPT. I mean, why don't we just ask? I'm not going to take the time to ask it. But I would ask ChatGPT. Actually, all these questions are good for ChatGPT. Now I want to know, let's ask it this question, because I want to know what this question even is, and maybe we can get a good answer. So let's, any guide help for working as a river guide? Let's go to ChatGPT. Any guide help for working as a river guide? It's all caps. Let's do this. I'm not yelling at you, ChatGPT. Don't worry. Here we go. Well, ChatGPT understands the question. It says, a guide isn't just somebody who rows a boat. You have to safely guide rafts, teach guests paddling, watch water levels, handle emergencies, entertain people, and sometimes help with camp gear or food. Yep. Skills you'll need: on-water skills, safety skills. Here we go. Same thing. Swimming, comfort in water, paddling, stay calm, first aid and CPR, rescue's a plus, decision-making, clear communications, confidence without being cocky. That's a big one. Patience with beginners. This is really good. Leadership and teamwork. This is a great answer, ChatGPT. Most guys follow a path like this. Get experience. Go rafting recreationally. Join a paddling club. Start on class one or two rivers, which if you don't have, it's sometimes hard to do. So I can get if that's hard to do. But step two, take a guide training course. Many outfitters run guide schools. 1 to 3 weeks. You'll learn rowing, rescue, guest management. Sometimes free, sometimes paid. Sometimes it is like sometimes you pay to do it. Some guide schools are free. Some you pay to be there. Sometimes leads to a job. Yep. And get certified CPR, first aid, swiftwater rescue technician, which I would say don't take swiftwater rescue technician, take whitewater rescue technician, and get a wilderness first aid or wilderness first responder. And then start as a rookie. Yeah. There's some age reality check, pros and cons. Well, this is cool. Let's ask us, can you recommend a guide school? Honestly, everyone, you could just replace all the questions you asked me with ChatGPT in the show. It doesn't need to exist. Here we go. Top river guide schools and programs. Oregon River Experiences, Web Planet, our pro guide school, which we're not offering this year, so you can't take it. And then California, here's a bunch. Wow, this is great. And it shows what they teach. Yeah. All right. I kind of want to ask it the other question. What was the other question? I have to find it. Everyone give me a second here to find that. I want to ask it because then I can answer this. Is it possible to put electric start on my errands? Let's see what ChatGPT says about this. Ooh, it's making it think. Oh, there you go. Here you go. Yes. You can often add an electric start to a pole start. This is for a snowblower? Are you kidding me? Yes, you can add skid shoes or sliders under the housing of a snowblower. All right. Why am I getting asked about snowblowers? Okay, here, we're moving on. No more ChatGPT. Let's get back to reality. Okay, that one. Okay, topic. Towing heavy flipped gear boats. All right, I haven't read this one yet. This one just got submitted like half an hour before the show. I can tell you it's really hard to tow heavy flip gearboats. It's like a gearboat flips and then getting it to shore is hard. I haven't read the question. This is just my quick answer from looking at the topic. Usually you're pushing it. You just put your bow up or you put your stern, you just like push it to shore, pull it to shore, push it to shore. You're not generally towing them. All right, so here we go. I'm guessing I'm too late for today's show. I hope not, so here it goes. You're not too late. You made it just in time. What is your recommendation for efficiently towing heavy flipped 18-foot gearboats in swift water to a place that's reasonable to organize in a reflip? I call it bulldozing. Because if you tie a rope from your boat to the other boat and pull, it's just not going to work. I mean, it's just going to... The rope's going to, this thing's going to start spinning because they're tied to each other. And then once you get to shore, the other boat's out there still in the current sometimes. So what you want to do is get the boat in front of you. And if it's not super swift, I'll push because I want to watch it. I want to be very delicate and like try to push it to shore. It takes time. Maybe get two boats pushing if you can, but then the oars start hitting. So it's really just one boat pushing. If I really need power, I'll spin around and pull and use my stern to like nudge it to shore. It helps to have somebody on the shore. So like when a big gearboat flip happens, and you're saying in swift water. So if it's a pool, this isn't hard. Swift water, it's a problem. So, you know, if it's a team I've worked with, we know what we're doing. If not, I'll be like, I'll recognize this is going to take a while. Like this isn't going to happen in just like 2 or 3 minutes. This is going to be, I'm going to look downstream and see what's way down there and be like, all right, how much time do we have? Do we have 10 minutes? Do we have 20 minutes? Like, what's our time? And I'll grab a kayaker or somebody and I'll look downstream to the place I want to get it to. And I'll say, kayaker, go down to that eddy down there and get to shore, tie a rope to a tree so that you can like clip onto this boat once I get it to you. Because you can get it to the shore, but if there's swift current, it's just not, it's going to keep bumbling down the shore. You need something to catch it. If there's a big eddy you can get into, cool, but sometimes it's not a big eddy. So it really helps to have like go or like other raft go. Or if I see somebody else bulldozing, like getting their boat up to push that boat over, I'm like, okay, cool, they got that. I'm going to bomb down to somewhere where I can be a catcher's mitt, whether I have another boat that can do the final stage into an eddy, or I'm going to tie my boat up and wrap a throwback around a tree and be ready to clip it on so we have it on shore. So for super swift water, that's what I'm going to do. If it's just big eddies, I'm just going to push and bulldoze it over. The other thing about getting, like if somebody's bulldozing a boat to shore, the other reason you want somebody ahead, you want downstream safety. Because a lot of times that bulldozing, people are so focused on the pushing the boat to shore, they make a mistake and they fall out. And then there's a swimmer. Or there's people on the upside down boat that fall off. And so you want somebody bombing ahead to be downstream safety and to help catch that boat when they get there. Okay, so as these boats, okay, I'm going to go on to the rest of your question. As these boats are so heavy, towing with just one rower, also in a heavy gear boat with multiple passengers, is really difficult. As I'm sure you know, we've entertained towing the flip boat with two boats hitched together like locomotives, towing the flip boats with two boats hitched to different D-rings, which is terribly inefficient. I'm pushing with one boat, I'm pulling with another. Okay, that sounds insane. That doesn't sound... I'm just going to say, in my experience, which I'm, you know, I could be totally wrong, which I'm sure I am, towing isn't going to work. Like tying your boat to another boat with a rope or a flip line and pulling it that way, unless it's really flat, it's just going to get out of control. What's going to happen is you have two boats tied to each other and stuff's going to seem like it's going really well for a bit, and then something's going to catch, the boat's going to catch, and you're going to turn and be tied to a boat, and it's actually pretty hazardous. Okay. We had a flip boat in Horn Creek Rapid, Grand Canyon spring, and flipped the boat at the bottom of Lava North, Alsek, in June. On the Alsek, the current was flowing 15 miles an hour, which made chasing down the flip boat and pulling in an eddy a monumental task. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's, that's why, like, if I'm, we do this trip in Bhutan where there's a big rapid and we ghost boat it. Sorry, we don't ghost boat it. We walk the guests around. And the gearboats have to go through, and it's like it's not a calm pool afterwards. The river's moving, and my biggest stress on the whole trip is that we flip a gearboat and then can't get it to shore. And it's not I haven't done the Alsek in a long time, so I forget what it's like after Lava North. But if I'm running a rapid with gearboats and I see after the rapid, it's fast moving current afterwards. It creates a super high anxiety level for me. And I plan for that. I'm like, man, if a boat flips here, what is our plan? And so that's me. If I'm on the outside and I scout the rapid, we ran, I think we had four gearboats, something like that. I don't remember. We scouted. I don't remember if we did this, but if I'm worried about flips, I feel like we took a cheat line and it wasn't that hard. But anyway, if I'm worried about flips, I'm going to probably have a plan ahead of time. Hey, if a boat flips here, I need you to bomb down, you know, get the rope on River Right so we can push it to you and grab onto it. And that could mean, you know, that could mean even like going on a tethered rescue and swimming out to it and attaching a rope on tethered rescue. That could be a potential use for a tethered rescue there. But also, I'm worried about the swimmers. That's cold water, and it could be a long swim. You know, if you flip a boat there, like, you got to worry about potential swimmers and getting that boat to shore. And so chasing down the flip boat is a monumental task. Like, I would say, I was just kind of rambling about what I was thinking. But I would say your best bet is going to be just to bulldoze it. Just, I call it bulldozing, just push it to shore. And it's going to take a long time, and you have to plan for that. But you have to plan for that by rigging your gear really well and having a preset plan for if it happens. Like on Horn Creek, on the Grand Canyon, almost anywhere you can flip, easy to get to shore. It's not a big deal. Like, there's not like 15 mile an hour water, but a lot of rapids, like Lava North or the trip we do in Bhutan, if you flip a boat over, it's going to go for a while, like potentially miles, right? You just, cause you just cannot get it to the bank. And when you do it, the water is too swift to like, it's not just always an eddy. And so really taking that like Lava North seriously because of the consequences of a flip and getting that boat to shore. So hopefully that me rambling kind of answered that question. That's it. It's a good question because it's something that you don't fear this happening until after it's happened to you. It's hard to explain. Like I'm at a rapid thing and I'm like, oh man, what if a gearboat flips here? That's going to be a disaster. Well, if you've never been a part of one of those, you don't see that potential danger, but getting a heavy gearboat flip back over or two even to shore in fast current is very hard. And yeah, it raises that rapid a level of difficulty higher because the recovery is pretty brutal. And not to mention the swimmers, you have swimmers that could be going 15 miles an hour too. Are you emphasizing pushing versus pulling due to the danger of having a line attached to flip boat? Yeah, I mean, so let me get a whiteboard here to explain this better. Let me remove this. Myself back up here. Hopefully you can still hear me in here. So if you have, where's my Lego raft? Okay, here I'm back. So I got Lego rafts. So if this is the shore right here, this is the river right here, right? And your upside down boat. And your upside down boat is like this. I'm saying you come over here and you push and push and you kind of get a little bit of an angle like this, right? If you just push like this, it kind of comes off sometimes. You want to kind of be like pushing up and just push and push and push and push and push and push and push. Or an advantage of that, of the, like the push, you can see that, right? Is you can see that the boat's going to be teetering and you want to just keep the angle so it stays there. If you're pulling in the oars, like pulling, you can do this too. It's just, it's going to slide off. Like you can't, hopefully you guys can still hear me, right? Because the microphone's right there. But if you're doing this, you don't always see what's going on. It just helps to be calm and just keep pushing. If you pull it like this, this is what I've never done and what I would fear. If you're pulling it, and then this gets stuck on a rock, then you're tied to it and you're gonna be like that. And you're just this, you're kind of a mess. And this is now tied to the boat and you have this whole disaster. Like that could happen. And you, or if you pull to shore, that's great. You pull to shore, but you're here and the boat's here. Like, how do you get out of the way when you're tied to it to get it on the shore? Unless there's a massive eddy, but like once you're tied to a boat and you're pulling or pushing, say you're pulling, it's just anything could happen. Things get tangled and weird. And the more boats you add to it, the more potential just tangled messiness you can get. So I'm just going to like, if I know it's like 5 miles of like class one or two, I'm like, guys, we're just going to just keep working it. And if I had sent a kayaker, if the flip happens here, right? It happens here. I'm like, hey, kayaker. I don't have a kayak here, but like, dude, go way down there and hang out there on the shore. And then I'm going to push. I'm aiming for the kayaker. And that kayaker, if it's on shore, can just clip a rope to it and it's stuck. Because a lot of times these banks are just flushing, especially like big volume stuff, like continuous water, stuff in flood. It really, you want somebody to bomb down, get out of their boat and be ready to grab. And you could even do this. I've never had to do this before, but you could do this with your rescue harness, especially with that tether thing. The little tether things are kind of dumb, actually. You could have your harness on a rope. You could jump out to the boat attach the thing to it and then clip that and get free and swim to shore or just swim to the boat and grab on. And then you'd have a rope on the boat. I have been on a few things where we have done rescues with the rope from shore. We need to get the boat to that rope down there. Somebody set one up. I've done that a few times. It's been a lifesaver. Okay. Oh, there's comments. Okay. Let's see. Are you emphasizing pushing versus pulling due to the danger of having a line attached to the flip boat? Yeah, pretty much. I don't think we could have gotten the boat into eddy without pulling. Yeah. I mean, I'd be surprised, but yeah. Also, we had to chase the flip boat on the outside 3 miles. Also, we had to chase the flip boat on the outside 3 miles downstream. We all gasped for the effort of hurting it, reflipping. Yeah. That's the hazard. When you look at a rapid like Lava North, and I vaguely remember it. Like, I'm not worried about the rapid that much. I'm worried about the recovery. You just look downstream and you're like, it just goes. That's a real hazard. That's a real issue. Like, a lot of times people are looking at the rapid. I got to go here. I got to go there. But like, I'm thinking it's hard to set downstream safety. It's the same thing with this rapid and baton that we do. You know, I set extra safety and we run the paddle boats down first through like, we port it, like line them down or get them down, however. And I have safety kayakers ready to go. We have a plan for if it happens, but it's exhausting. And what happens is if you're, I'm guessing this is what happened, Hyde. You like, you get it there, almost there, but it can't attach to shore. You're like, oh, we got it. And then it bounces down. You're like, oh, I got to catch up with it again. And you get it to shore and you can't get it and it bounces down. Like, you just keep getting almost there and something happens. And so that's where like it's a marathon. Like, you're not getting, like, usually when a boat flips, people are like, oh, we're just gonna push it to shore as fast as we can. You have to think long term. Like, this is a long project. And unfortunately, the only way to get experience doing this is by doing it. And so that's why in some of our classes, I can't remember if the class you took, Heidi, we did this, but we purposely flip rafts and let them just go so people can see, and they're empty lightweight boats. They can see how hard and long it takes to get them to shore. And it's beating up on my oars, my frames. I'm watching my stuff go upside down, just getting beat up. But it's, I'm going to break oars once in a while doing this, but you see the boat doesn't just calmly get pushed ashore. It's a long-term project, especially with a gear boat. And so you're going to be tired. That's where like fitness, I'm sure your group is fit, Heidi, but like fitness really matters for a trip, you know, with a rapid, like at Lava North. The LSEC is generally pretty easy, but Lava North, I think people call class five, not because, and I wouldn't call it class five because the rapid itself is class five. It's because the potential aftermath of what you dealt with is a pretty big consequence. We had a bow clip to stern or bow. I don't know what that means. We had a bow clip to stern or bow of the boat. We had a bow clip to stern or bow. I don't know what that means, but you know, whatever works. I would say my biggest advice here is when you have a rapid where the recovery is not easy, that there's a plan. That you talked about, like, hey, if a boat flips here, guys, we're going to be chasing it for a while. And I need so-and-so to go downstream and set downstream safety. Can somebody try to get to shore with a rope so we can get the boat close to it? Oh, I've heard of a story too on the Tuolumne. I wasn't there, where the guy jumped up on the upside down boat, tied their throw bag to the boat and then threw a throw bag to shore and somebody was there and they wrapped it around a tree. That can happen too. But when you flip gearboats on rivers that are continuous, it really helps to have talked about it beforehand. Like, hey, here's, because I'm just guessing how do you guys didn't talk about it? And so you're spending the first mile just like a monkey fucking a football out there. Like, you're just bumping into each other, causing problems. There's like people, everybody's trying to push because they're all trying to be heroes. And then you're like, okay, this isn't working. We need to, like, there's a moment of like, oh man, this is a problem. And then you're like, hey, you realize, I'm just guessing this will happen, Heidi, that there's like a long, you're like, okay, we recognize this is going to take longer. Let's think longer term. And then you come up with some sort of plan and you execute it, and it doesn't always work the first time. You just keep trying. The boat pulling the flip boat was clipped to the bow of the flip. Okay. Yeah, I don't think that's was going to be effective, honestly, for a number of reasons. But one is, again, this is the biggest one that I would see, having been on a bunch of these, and maybe you got lucky. If you're, again, if this is a flip boat, and you're pulling it like this, and you get to shore, well, you're on shore. How does this boat get to shore? Unless there's a big eddy that you can just all swing into. But these continuous rivers like this, usually this boat's in the way. And so now you're on shore, unless somebody can grab you or somebody can jump out, and but holding on to these boats tied to each other is a problem. That's where I like. So I think in your case, the being clipped to each other worked. And I'm sure there's examples of where it does work. I just don't think. I think generally in all the times I've done it, we've just pushed it and 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 eventually got to shore. And hopefully there's an eddy or somebody there to catch it, because I've been on a lot of them where we pushed ashore and it just keeps, like, we get it there, we're done. But nope, the current just keeps taking it down and we're doing it again. That's the big issue I have. Okay, Heidi, hopefully answer that question. Just to sum all of that up quickly, my technique would be my advice, and I mentioned this a few times, when you see a big rapid you're scouting and it doesn't have easy recovery, communicate like, hey guys, communicate that as a potential issue and have a plan. And then when the boat does flip, my best practice would be to just push it to shore and have somebody have a plan for when it hits shore, what it's going to do. And if you do something else, like sometimes other things work. And a lot, it's like a lot of boating, a lot of life. Like sometimes you have to just make up what to do based on the circumstance. And that sounds like what you did. But to have a boat go 3 miles downstream, that's boating. Like you have to be, like if you can't handle a boat going 3 miles downstream, then, you know, maybe you should get into cycling. Or something else. I mean, I guess that was a bad example because I know you're a big cyclist. I'm not talking about you, Heidi, in general. I'm talking about the average person. Like, but just like boats will sometimes go a long ways downstream. And it's part of what we do. And so like having a good plan, having a good team, being physically fit to deal with that, especially on the OSEC, like you're in the middle of nowhere and nobody's going to come save you. I guess you'd call a helicopter if you needed to. And there's probably stuff on that boat that was important, like food, and first aid kits, potentially somebody's dry bag with their sleeping bag, and it's cold out there. So like, you know, you need that boat, you need to get it saved, and your stuff can't get wet or lost. And so the trip like the LSEC isn't one where you're like, you want a team of physically fit people who are good, can make good judgment calls, work together. Everybody gets along. I know in my LSEC trip, we had really heavy winds on the lakes. And some people just weren't making there. They just couldn't cross the lakes and they just had the fitness to cross the lakes. And that was becoming a hazard because people just getting pushed to the shore. Okay. Anyway, moving on. My username blows. Thanks for doing these shows. They're way more entertaining than asking AI. Yeah. Okay. 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 No AI is going to say it's like a monkey fucking football. Yeah, it's true. It might, you know, that's a line from Days of Thunder, my second favorite movie of all time. It's worth watching if you haven't seen it. Okay, maybe it's a saying people have. I just got that from Days of Thunder. You're right, there's nothing better than getting stuck with a difficult rescue to practice. You're right, there's nothing better than getting stuck with a difficult rescue to practice such a rescue. But damn, yeah, I mean, that's how you learn. I guarantee you go run Lava North again in particular. And you'll talk about like, hey guys, what's our plan for boat flips? Same thing. A good example of this, Heidi, near you, the Crooked, there's that rapid No Name. Let me see if I can pull that up. How do I get? Yeah. No Name. No, it's a big class five-ish rapid. This is a place I think about this too. Here we go. This is video that I took. And so that's, I was in the yellow boat right. Let me see. I'm in the yellow boat right here. I caught this eddy. And I'm flying the drone, so I'm not safety at all. And actually, this day that we went, there was terrible safety. Like, it was, there was probably like 8 catboats, and they went one at a time, and nobody looked back, and they're all gone. They're all like gone. I waited back because my friends caught up with us, and they needed safety. They didn't have any downstream safety, but nobody was like, when I ran this rapid, nobody was downstream of me even looking. They were around the corner, gone. And so in this rapid in particular, it's kind of like Lava North. It's a difficult rapid, but you can see where I am is the bottom of the rapid, but it just goes. So if you flip, the hazard to me, like in a rapid like this, isn't necessarily the rapid. It's the fact that it goes around the corner and it's still moving. And so a flip is really hard to recover, both the swimmers and the boat. I mean, they have a great line. Watch this. This is one that when I first got the drone, I was learning how to use it. There's a far right cheat line. That's how I caught that eddy. But they went pretty far left, which puts you right above the meat. And so this day, somebody flipped in that hole right there. And I remember, it's funny, she didn't want to scout it because it's like kind of a long walk down there. She's like, I'll just take my chances. And she's the one that flipped. And they got just left her there. Now, if you'd flipped there, again, you are swimming all of this. And you have an upside down boat. And that recovery, and like what we see around the corner, it does keep going. A recovery is very hard, and that's a real hazard. And so I wouldn't call this a class 5 rapid based on the move they just made. I'd make it on the fast that if you don't make the move, the recovery after the rapid is actually pretty challenging. And I mean, you could have flipped anywhere here too, but you can see around the corner, it goes for a while. And so flipping, you could recover potentially in this little bit of water here, but like probably in here, maybe it just keeps going. So that continuity after the rapid is a serious hazard. All right, let's go back to big. All right. So that I think is it for this. Oh no, I have one more thing to talk about. This is a long show. I wanted to talk about something. Let me go back to here. We were going to talk about, PPE and PRE. Okay, this has been a long show. We're going to finish this off with this one article let's get rid of this, that I wrote. And I'm just going to go through this pretty quick. So I wrote this blog post, for the River Hardware website that I want to bring up. And just to talk about gear that we have. And we don't need to talk about this. If you don't want to hear about it, wouldn't be... You can leave the show. It's fine. Like, you might be bored by this. And this is really written for guides, but it applies to everybody. And I'm trying to define personal protective equipment, PPE, and PRE, personal rescue equipment, separately. So this is more of a vocabulary talk than anything else. And so I'm defining personal protective equipment as your PFD, your helmet, your shoes, your thermal protection, wetsuit, dry suit, layers, your knife, your whistle, and a CPR face shield. To me, that's the stuff you use to protect yourself. Although a whistle doesn't protect yourself necessarily, but you can blow for help. So I guess it does. My river knife, if you're caught in a rope, gets you free. CPR face shield protects you from somebody's foam when they're drowning. You're doing CPR on them. This is all stuff to protect yourself. And so this to me is what, as boaters, we should be wearing and carrying with this as personal protective equipment. Separately, I'm going to call it personal rescue equipment. I'm not the only one that calls it this, but I've heard this a bunch, and I'm trying to make this the standard terminology for what PRE is. That would be your throw bag, whether it's a waist belt or in your boat. A flip line, like we talk about, you know, it's basically just a piece of rope used to flip rafts, but could have other use. A rescue harness, for those of you that like to have rescue harnesses, that's a piece of rescue equipment. It's protective in some ways because I've heard of kayakers getting pinned and people clipping onto the rescue harness to save them, but I'm going to call it more about rescuing other people's stuff. And then your own little guide pin kit. And that could be just like your own small Prusik pulleys, carabiners, flip line, to that you either carry super light under PFD, which I wouldn't recommend, or you have like a little bag somewhere that has just a kit. In addition, as a guide, we would carry like on the trip a big pin kit, especially on an overnight trip, that can handle like a massive pin that goes in the sweep boat. It's also good if every guide has just like these items, but the stuff they're comfortable with and know how to use in their own bag. I'm not saying you have to have all this stuff. I'm just saying this is the stuff I'm calling personal rescue equipment. And this is the stuff I'm calling personal protective equipment. So if you want to read the blog, it's on the River Harbor website. I just wrote it and published it last week. And with that, I think we're ready to close this show. Thank you all for watching. Happy New Year to everyone. Hope you all had a good Christmas. And I'll probably see you all next week.